Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance today to hear from someone who will soon be awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. In 2020, the nation's highest civilian honor went to survivors of the sinking of the USS Indianapolis. In the future, the women who worked on the home front so men could fight overseas, America's legendary Rosie the Riveters, will receive that honor. Angie Schiappi of Clovis, California is one of them. When she was a teenager, she would get up early every morning and ride with her father, her brother, and two sisters to the Kaiser Shipyards in Richmond, California, where she was a welder helping to put together Liberty ships. If you go to that same location today, you will find the Rosie the Riveter World War II Homefront National Historic Park. I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And Angie, I'm pretty sure that 76 years ago, when you fired up that acetylene torch for the final time, I bet you didn't expect what you and all those other Americans were doing to become such a celebrated part of our history.
You think about it.
How about when you go back there now to Richmond and to that museum and that historic park?
I'm amazed at the pictures and all. It brings so much memory back of all the ships we did, everything that happened. Everything's in black and white on the wall. I'm amazed. I didn't think I'd ever see it.
Did it give you a different perspective on the significance of what you did?
Yeah, it did. I've been there. I did that. Real happy.
Did you learn anything about the volume of ships that you produced or how quickly you turned them out?
I always wondered how many ships we did and how many sailors got killed. I always think, I wonder what happened. You know, I wonder what happened to the ship. And then, like I said, when I watched Hugh Hauser, he had all them all lined up, you know, and they were showing all the ships. I said, yeah, I remember that part. The hulls underneath. I remember all that.
So if somebody is listening right now and they say, hey, I want to go see this Rosie the Riveter World War II Homefront National Historic Park, and they head over to Richmond to check it out, what should they look for? What do you think they're going to get out of that experience?
They're going to see all, get a lot of memories. They're going to say, oh, my grandfather, oh, my knee, my uncle. I remember when I was little, my uncle did this, my uncle did that. They'll see all the sailors and pictures of army guys and nurses and anybody who served, they'll see all that. Mm-hmm. That's all memories, good memories.
For someone who didn't live it, how would you explain the significance or the importance of you and all the other Rosies in the bigger picture of World War II and what ended up happening?
I always think about, where are they at now? You know, I've been there. I did that. I wonder what happened to these people. We were so happy, so young, doing all this and all that. I never thought that I'd get this old to think about it and look back to see what I did. I'm glad I did it.
And why does it matter? What do you think you accomplished?
Because I put my 2 cents in. I did my thing. At least I did something.
And if you weren't all doing it, then it might not have had the same outcome.
No. Mm-mm. I think about all the Rosies that, you know, are gone. They did their bit.
It sounds like this is something that you're proud of.
Yes, I am. I'm proud of it, yeah. Looking back, I'm saying, how could I have done that? You know, how could I have done that, you know? I was wild, you know. 18 years old, you're raring to go.
You know, typically, I only talk to people who've served in our armed forces on this program, but over the years, people have recognized how significant Rosie the Riveters were to that victory in World War II. But there is a veteran sitting here, too, and you've been married to him for the last 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
How did you and Vince meet?
When I was living in Fresno, working for a Dr. Tyner, chiropractor, and his father and mother used to come in for treatment. And he was in the service at the time, and he had an older brother. They used to bring them in for treatment. And one day the mother came in, and she says, my son's going to come home on leave. I want you to meet him. And I thought, well, I already had a boyfriend. And I thought, well, I don't know. And she says, when he comes, I'll bring him in, you meet him. And I said, oh, okay. When he came home on leave, he brought her to the doctor, and I met him. I says, that's for me. And I met him. And we started going out. He had his uniform. He was in service. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd go out with a serviceman. That was in November. And December, for Christmas, we were still together. And he went back in January to Washington. And he says, if you marry me, I won't re-enlist. Will you marry me? I said, yes. So that's why he didn't re-enlist. He just went back from his leave. And he came home in February, and we were married a few months later.
And when you said, yeah, that's for me, what was it about him that made you so convinced?
I don't know if it was the uniform or it was him or what. That's what they look like, you know.
I see his hair there on the wall, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see a wedding picture, too.
Yeah.
We'll put that at hometownheroesradio.com. So you've been married 70 years.
In June.
That's a long time.
Yes, it sure is.
What's your secret?
He likes my cooking. I take good care of him. You know, I make sure that he eats his meals. He takes his medication. I mean, I've always been there for him, and he's been there for me.
You have 4 kids and 12 grandkids and 6 great-grandkids. I'm sure somewhere along the line they've asked you for some advice on how to stay married that long. Do you have some advice for people who want to catch up to you guys there at 70 years?
Not really. Just be patient. Be patient. Love each other. When you get married, I do, till the end. That's it. My father and mother were the same way. Grandma and Grandpa, too. I'm following their tradition.
I'm going to ask Vince some questions here in a minute, but I'm just wondering, since we're getting awfully close to Thanksgiving here, when you have the daughter of Mexican immigrants married to the son of Italian immigrants, what does Thanksgiving dinner look like?
Turkey. Every year, turkey. I have all my grandkids here, my family. I cook a big turkey outside. And to this day, I'm still cooking. I make sure he gets 3 meals a day. Yeah, I love to cook. Don't take me away from the kitchen. If you do, bury me.
You're going to have a lot of people that want to come over for dinner after they hear this.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Thanksgiving. It's right in the name.
Yeah.
It's about gratitude and counting our blessings. What are the things that you're thankful for?
Everything. My health, my kids, my husband, what I've got, everything. I do. I pray every day. Every morning, I sit at my desk, and I do a lot of novenas. I don't know if you know what they are, but I do a lot of rosaries, a lot of prayers, and I just thank God that I woke up.
What would you say you're most proud of?
My kids, my husband, my family. I love my family.
That family includes her daughter, Becky Pattison, to whom Angie has passed the Thanksgiving dinner torch as far as cooking responsibilities go. Not to be confused with an acetylene torch, of course. And speaking of, Becky, how has your understanding of the significance of your mom's Rosie the Riveter days developed over the years?
My aunt had been going to the Rosie the Riveter celebrations every year, and she kept on trying to get my mom to go. And I don't think my mom knew the significance of being a Rosie. It was her job, and that's how she took it until we finally got her forcibly to go with us to the Rosie thing. My dad told her, she goes, it's like me being in the military. He goes, it was my job, but that we celebrate being in the military now and going on the honor flight. So he goes, this is your honor flight, going to the Rosie celebration. And so once she got there, I think she realized what a significant, I mean, I'm being a woman. I am very proud of my mom being a Rosie and my aunts, because I had 2 aunts that did it too. And she always downplayed it. She never thought it was no big deal. Oh yeah, I worked in the shipyard. It's no big deal. And then I think as my Aunt Connie started going to the celebrations, my cousins kept going. She goes, Becky, you need to come. So I actually went by myself the year before, and I go and celebrate it with my Aunt Connie. And I go, oh my God, I got to get my mom here. I go, to have 2 sisters that worked in the shipyard together, I go, that has to be unique, that they are still alive, and they actually had their spouses them with them. I mean, that has to be very unique.
What's something about your parents that people who haven't met them should know about them?
They respect each other. I mean, they might have their differences and stuff, but they do respect each other. What she can't do, he does, and what he can't do, she does. So they make a good balance with each other. When I was little, they used to try to embarrass all my friends, so...
How's that?
They used to like to dance in the middle of the kitchen floor, just no music, but they would just start dancing.
Gazing into each other's eyes?
Uh-huh. Just to see the reaction of my friends or whoever that was over there.
I think I know what I need to have them do before I leave.
You know, when you're younger, you're going, no big deal. But as I grow older, I realize that I'm very proud of my parents and very proud that they served. My dad served. I mean... And then my mom was a Rosie. I'm just very proud of them. And it makes me sad that America's in this uproar that it is. And hopefully we unite a little bit better.
Words we can all take to heart. So we've heard from Angie and daughter Becky, but I also want you to hear from Becky's dad, Angie's husband of 70 years, Vince Schiappi. Vince, you heard what Angie had to say about the key to staying married for 70 years. So you have a response or a rebuttal for that?
Well, I pretty much agree with her on her food. I love her food. She's the best cook in town. I think she should have opened up a restaurant. Her first name is Angie, so I think Angelina would be nice. Angelina's Taqueria or something in that order, you know, yeah. Mexican restaurant. She knows how to make the beans.
Give us the menu here. What are your favorites that she's made over the years?
Well, chili verde, I love that. And she makes a pile of that all the time, and tortillas and beans and rice. She watches over me like I'm a little baby, you know. She does everything for me except feed me a baby bottle, you know. And so I'm grateful for that and everything that a man wishes, I think. And so she's great. She's a good wife, good woman.
Let's talk about your background a little bit. So I mentioned her parents were immigrants from Mexico. Your parents came over from Italy in the 1920s?
Yeah, 1923, I believe it was. It was right after World War One. My dad was in the Italian Army at that time. When the World War One was over, you know, all the servicemen came home and all that, from what he was telling me. And there was no jobs. Everybody was just down and out. The whole world just went to heck. So he met my mother. First, her sister came with her husband to Quincy, Massachusetts. They were building a house back there. He was a mason. So my mother and father, you know, they said, well, go ahead, we'll sign for you to come here to America and buy a boat ticket and come on over. So they came over and they moved in with my aunt and uncle. And my father helped my uncle build his house there in Quincy, Massachusetts. So finally, they decided they moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and that's where I was born. I had two brothers. Actually, I had three. One passed away when he was about 2 years old, and then I come along. Mm-hmm. And I was the fourth one. All boys. My mother kept saying, gee, I want a girl. You know, I want a girl, you know. And finally, that was it, no more. But my brother died of pneumonia. In those days, they didn't have the medical knowledge that they have now. And he was 2 years old, I believe. And I was 6 months old when he died. But my other two brothers, of course, they were older. My brother John and my brother Frank. And that's a picture of them.
All in uniform.
Yeah, all in uniform. That's Frank in the middle. And that's John on the left. And John on the left was in the Pacific during World War II. And my brother Frank, he was in Europe, in Germany and France and over there. And, of course, that's me. I was in during the Korean War time. And with them being older, of course, they went in during the war.
So you're a little boy growing up with two older brothers. What was kind of your outlook? Did you have some ideas of, hey, when I grow up, here's what I'm going to do?
I was on the run all the time. I was a brat. And not having two older brothers around, with them being in the service, them being 4, 5, 6 years older, they had other ideas, you know. So I was pretty much by myself with my parents, you know. So I was just, whatever happened, happened.
Was that hard for you to have your brothers overseas and worry about whether they would come back?
I thought about them all the time. I was well aware of World War II. I was into it. I would read up on it a lot. At those days, everything was black and white. You go to the movies, and they would have that in between the main feature and another feature. They would have a news kind of a thing, and they would show Europe, Pacific, guns shooting off and everything. And I was fascinated, or just, I was in awe over all those things, you know. And then I would think of my brothers, and I know they were in the middle of it, but they came out good.
Did it seem to you that they were changed by the war from how they were before they left and when they came back?
Oh, yeah. They were so mature when they came home. I couldn't believe it. When we were together at home, I would always look up to them like, here's this big man here, you know. They came home in their uniforms, you know. I was real proud of them. I was just in awe all the time, and I just couldn't believe that they were so much bigger than me, you know, and I was always looking up to them as my big brothers. I was very proud of them. I remember when the war started, when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. In those days, it was just radio, TV. They never heard of such a thing, you know, cell phones and computers. That was something you just never heard of. My father, I remember him talking to my mother. He says, you know, they may draft me. He was already an American citizen. He became an American citizen back in the 30s after he was here about 10 years, and then he became an American citizen, and my mother. And I remember him telling her, and my mother started crying. So I thought of it later on, and I started crying about it, you know. I said, gee, my dad's going to go to the war. being a young kid, all I knew was war meant death. And I said, I'm going to lose my father. I'll never forget that. I can see myself right there at that time. I was telling one of the other kids, the neighbor kids, and I said, my dad's going to go to war. And they looked at me like, I could still see their faces, like, so what? You know, what's that? They didn't know any more than I did what a war was all about. He already served in the Italian army. Come to find out later, he was too old to go in, so they rejected him. So we were all worried about that for a while, because I remember him telling my mother, no, no, in Italian. I understood Italian. They said, no, I'm too old.
His father was too old, and young Vinny, as his brothers called him, was too young. Or was he? Wait until you hear how old he was when he lied his way into the army. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.